Yes, there's what does enlightenment mean to me, and then there's other people's definitions, right? And everybody has a slightly different definition. You know, the Tibetan Buddhists have one way of saying it, and then you see all these people that Steve interviews, you know, who have like this jhana and this path and this road and this whatever, right? And they all have these like amazing ideas of what that means. And for some people, that means they have like no more. There's no negative emotions whatsoever, ever. And you're totally unattached. And, you know, and that to me personally feels like, why? You know, personally. So that's why I'm saying, for me personally, the idea of not having emotions or not not being in life anymore, you know, and just being in this state of grand, whatever they call it, equanimity and non-attachment seems pointless, personally, right? That's not to say that for other people that's not good, but I would rather be in my life with all the ups and downs, but not be gripped by it. Right? That's what I mean with freedom. Because the thing is, I don't think there, I personally don't think there's an issue with having strong emotions. This is not a very male perspective, obviously. You know, I don't think there's an issue with there being suffering and horrible things happening and stress and all of that. But I think the problem is when you're gripped by it and you are at the mercy of your patterns and your habits and you can't step out of them. You're essentially run by stuff versus you at least having an outside view on that stuff so that you're not completely churned by the stuff all the time. So that's how I would look at the freedom from your patterns and habits, but not to the point where you're like, at all times, because then what, right? I mean, I think that the creative thrust and the enjoyment of life and also the enjoyment of the drama of relationship, you know, all the things that happen in that space, I wouldn't want to give up personally. And so I've never really spent even a moment thinking about getting enlightened or wondering if I'm enlightened. I'm definitely not, you know, or any of those things. But what I'm super passionate about, both in my therapeutic work and, you know, in everything that we do in workshops, is that you are not, that your life isn't caused by these things, but you have cause over your life. And that's my aim and I guess mission statement or something like that. I think most people who claim to be enlightened are actually not, I would think. And then there's some people who don't say a word and you see them and they're just so, right? I mean, just so permeable and blissful and open and loving and surrendered, but they wouldn't even know the term. You know, anybody who claims these grand things typically has some pretty deep dark shit somewhere in the background. And we know that because nowadays, of course, with the help of everybody being on everybody, which is also not, you know, necessarily a good thing, but we hear all the shit that goes on behind the scenes, and we hear all these supposedly enlightened masters, you know, having little hissy fits when their soup isn't exactly warm enough and stuff like that. And that happens in all traditions, not just in the Buddhist or in the Hindu traditions. It, you know, it's a thing. So right. There's lots to be said, but we don't have to say it. You know. Thank you. Well, I mean, I think you had a fairly extreme version of that, but I think in general, you know, because this is for everyone, but in general, I would say that acquiring proper boundary function is one of those things, you know, when Tracy goes, well, what is freedom, or how do you go about not being run by your patterns? Proper boundary function is one of those things that if you are able to acquire that, it goes a long way towards some freedom and some, you know, enjoyment. And proper boundary function is an interesting inquiry, because what it means is that not only can people not transgress on you, but you also can't transgress on people, right? And that's the interesting thing about that, is that when you know, some people call, parts of that in relationship codependence or toxic, whatever, you know. I mean, there's all different ways of putting it, but essentially, when two people draw energy from each other for the sake of perpetuating old patterns, that causes trouble in a relationship. Now, do we all do it? Yes. Is it avoidable? No, because you're not going to be attracted to people who don't perpetuate your patterns. That's the unfortunate and bitter truth, is that we're only attracted to people who replicate the patterns of our upbringing. This is, by the way, also true for the spiritual teachers and leaders and gurus and everything that you pick, is they are going to just give you a spiritualized version of your original abuse or whatever it is, right? Or unlove or whatever. And that's how we function. We hook into that, because those are the early patternings, which is what we're going to do in this next week. Those are the early patternings of how we perceive that we are loved, or how we not get love, right? So that it goes both ways. You are deriving something from his behavior, and he's deriving something from your behavior, and that keeps it in an equilibrium till somebody breaks it. You broke it, right? But till then, he's giving you something that your small Hannah knows or is aware of as a deficit, so to speak. And your adult part goes, this is really shit. But that small child part knows that and can tolerate that, or even likes it, or requires it for proper functioning, right? These are sub-personalities, not you as Hannah. And the other way around too, your behavior gives him something, and the way he behaves gives him something in relationship to you. So you don't have to do this anymore, because you're not with him. But what you do need to know for future situations is that you're going to pick people who display a certain kind of attitude towards you. That's the thing that you want to shore up, whatever it is, right? We're kind of digging around in the grab bag of possible dysfunctions, right, that we all have. And so that particular thing you can shore up by going, when you can isolate what that is, the two or three sentences that repeat themselves, you know that that's not that person. That person is an emanation of that thing, so to speak, right? And then you can boundary against that and go, that doesn't work for me. This is unacceptable behavior. When you do this, it feels like that to me. And that's the beginning of the boundary. But that, of course, also means when that person actually stops this behavior, you won't get the validation of some core beliefs. Yes, you have to find your core beliefs, and then you shore those up by essentially setting boundaries against those core beliefs being reinforced in you or validated in you. And so that's the deeper aspect of boundary function. And then, of course, you have to learn how to say these things. No, I don't want this. This doesn't work for me. I would rather X. I can't do this, but I can do this. When I, those kind of very specific communications of boundary setting. Well, you can keep the beauty in the heart, but, relationships come and they go. And this one is in the go department. And while that can be sad, you can go, oh, we had some amazing stuff, but ultimately we weren't a fit. You don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. But you also don't have to glorify those pieces, you know. You can miss those pieces. There's nothing wrong with missing the beauty, but you have to be very clear that it wasn't worth it, you know. It's a little bit like you really like potato chips, but you're, you know, mortally allergic to potatoes, right? There's a price to pay. You still love the potato chip, but the potato chip and you don't agree. In our body, energy is allocated where it is needed. We've talked about this before. So cortex of the brain produces energy, electrical energy, I should say, not spiritual energy, electrical energy. And that electrical energy goes onto the neuropathways and then produces electrical signals as well as neurotransmitters. It's much more complicated than that, but that will have to do, right? So everything that we do requires energy, and that energy is finite. We can only produce a certain amount of electrical energy per second. So the body is a genius of energy distribution. So wherever you don't need energy, it's there isn't any just hanging around. Mm-hmm. And wherever you do need energy, it's happening, mm-hmm. right? So it's being taken. That's why they say energy flows where attention goes. Mm-hmm. So wherever you need it, it's happening. Wherever you don't need it, it's taken. And that's completely normal. But so if you now do one kind of activity a lot, you'll have very strong patterns of behavior and activity in that area. And then what that means is that, of course, electrical energy also goes the path of least resistance, meaning wherever there's the biggest pattern in the brain and in the body is where your energy goes first, which is why we're such creatures of habit. It's not useful if the body has to build a new pattern every time we do something. First of all, it would be pretty inconvenient if every time you drive a car, you would have to learn it fresh, right? But also from an energy distribution standpoint, the energy always goes where there's the biggest road, so to speak. So now let's say you have a lot of doing happening, a lot of thinking, a lot of doing, which most of us do because that's where we live. That means that the energy is taken from down here, where not much is happening when you sit and think and you ruminate and you figure things out and you do things and you're on your computer first thing in the morning and then, you know, like that kind of stuff. We all have done it, right? When you habitually start your day with computer work or email work or whatever, you're constantly needing all the energy up here, which makes you weak in the lower body and weak in your disposition. It also reduces your pleasure, your power, your intuition, your actual ability to navigate from that place of very deep power. So that's the first thing, is that, of course, the reason why we're doing all the things we're doing is so that there's good, strong pathways in the areas where we want them. And not just in the areas where we need them, meaning the upper part of our body. So a lot of what we're doing has to do with building freeways towards pleasure and intuition and feeling and aliveness. But now if you're overtaxed and overstimulated and stressed, then it's not just enough that the energy goes there. It needs to stay there at all costs because you're zapping energy from everywhere you need. And the physiological response in a woman's body to accomplish that is clench. Mm-hmm. Clench and tightness in the lower body. So the energy gets squeezed up. Like it's like when you get the toothpaste out of the tube. So you're kind of constantly rolling the toothpaste up. Here, 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 here. And typically the lock for keeping the energy up is in the diaphragm, solar plexus area. And so that's how you keep it all going upwards. And then down here, it's fairly void and only whatever is absolutely needed is happening. And then you feel the pulling up of the pelvic floor and the perineum and the tightness in those areas of the body. And then that allows the energy to stay up here, but it also means it's not naturally flowing back down when you are done with the activity. So the push, the way I describe the push, is that essentially you start willing your life and your energy from here, because you're constantly keeping this tight. And you also see people that do this. Have you ever seen that? You sometimes see it when people do relaxation. They lay there and their chin is like really far away, like when they're laying flat. That's the push. It's the leading with the squeeze. This and this are related, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. So the push is essentially the attempt, the chronic attempt, now habitual, ingrained as a pattern, clenching, upward clenching of the energy. And you can typically tell, right, how far, if you lay down and you push your fingers in here, you can pretty much tell how stressed you are. If it kind of goes like this, you know, that kind of tension, then you know you're definitely on the stress, on the, you know, upper stress level. And then there's like habitual clench, there is, you know, acute clench and habitual clench. And so releasing the push or working against the push is the act of activating these parts of the body through practice, and then the relaxing of habitual tension over time, and so that you have patterns of being able to move energy up and down easily and quickly and effectively.